Hello, everybody. Hope you're all doing well today. Welcome, welcome. So this is Joanna, and today we're going to be looking at the very, very important topic of supporting our clients to cultivate self-love. And maybe along the way we'll get a couple of tips to go deeper with our own self-love, too. So why are we looking at cultivating self-love? You know, this is, I put the self-love training and, you know, this last stretch of trainings, which are kind of advanced, you know, more advanced tools, things that, you know, a lot of times don't get looked at. So why is why are we looking at cultivating self-love? Why is it important? Some of the people in this training are business coaches or health coaches or branding coaches or massage therapists, acupuncturists, et cetera. So what does self-love have to do with any of that? Well, you probably already know. I probably don't have to say it, but I will. Self-love is one of the most important components to being able to achieve a goal, any goal, any goal, whether it's around your health or your business or your relationships, your home, whatever it is. Self-love is vital. Cultivating self-love, I've come to see, is not only is it a vital piece of being able to achieve a goal, but there are some of those people that are just get it done people, right? They're going to achieve their goals just because they're type A, they need to get it done. So maybe for those people, self-love isn't required to be able to achieve the goal, right? Because they're type A. They're going to get it done anyway. But for those people, cultivating self-love is still super important and super vital, because oftentimes type A people, get it done people, they'll achieve their goals, but they're not kind to themselves in the process. They don't take pleasure in the process. As they go through the process of getting stuff done, they'll over-push, overwork, flagellate themselves, deny themselves nourishment, whatever it is. And one of my biggest coaching philosophies, like for me, for Sacred Depth, one of the coaching commandments for Sacred Depth is that I'm not, as a coach, I'm not interested in only helping my clients achieve their outer goals. The outer goals are really important, and that's absolutely part of my purpose, but for me, and for Sacred Depths, it's about helping clients achieve their outer goals while enjoying the process of achievement, while learning how to be more of who they are through that process of achievement, while being at peace as much as we can, right? Be at peace through the process of achievement, while growing through that process of achievement. And the self-love piece is so necessary to all of that. Cultivating self-love, at least in my experience, is not something that we ever come to a rival with. We're never like, okay, I've achieved the highest and the best expression of self-love. I've 100% learned how to love myself, and now I'm done. the lesson is over, right? So at least in my own personal experience and in the experience of those women that I've served and also friends and colleagues, pretty much everyone I've ever known, there's always more self-love to cultivate. We never really come to the end of the road with that one and say, I did it, it's perfect, it's done and maintained forever, right? If only, wouldn't that be great? I mention this because I really see self-love as a process, not a destination, but a cultivating self-love is an ongoing process, and it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. It's something that's cultivated over time. I've absolutely seen and witnessed and helped facilitate breakthrough moments of self-love for clients where there's a big breakthrough, a big, big leap in terms of growth and progress and development when it comes to self-love. But the story never ends there, right? As we've spoken about before, there's a difference between breakthrough and transformation. The transformation is a marathon. It's something to continually work on. I want to be clear and explicit about this for you so that as you work with your own clients, you know that it's not a once and done. In addition to it being a process and it not being just a once and done, the other thing I want to share as we step into the topic today is that, you know, similar to a number of other topics that we've looked at in this training, 90 minutes, you know, obviously isn't going to do self-love, cultivating self-love justice. I'd love to do a 5-day retreat with you just on this. There's tons and tons and tons of tools. But my intention for our time today is to give you a really strong starting point on how to work with self-love with your clients, how to spot when the self-work love is needed, and then to give you some tools. There, like I said, there's so many different tools and techniques. I've picked out some of my most favorite ones for you that I'll be sharing today. So I want to start with a definition of what self-love is. And I'll be honest, the first time I taught this particular class when I was preparing for it, I spent, you know, just a little bit of time trying to define, write out a definition for the class, you know, to teach everyone in the class what self-love is. But what just kept on coming through every time I sort of tried to define it for everyone else is that the definition of self-love is really personal to each one of us. It's probably a little bit different for each and every human being. There's more than one definition of self-love. So I want to give you an opportunity right now to define it for yourself. So take about a minute and jot down, make some notes for yourself. What does self-love mean for you? Let's call it ideal self-love. If you were at the top of your game when it came to loving yourself, what would that even mean? And just take a moment and define that for yourself. All right, next question. What do you sense would be possible for you if you were to reach that next level of really deeply loving yourself, inner or outer, inner and outer, I should say? What do you sense would be possible for you if you were to reach, from wherever you are now, if you were to reach that next level of what you just defined for yourself, that next level of really deeply loving yourself? What would be possible for you? And then when you think about your clients or your coaching buddy or even friends or people in your family or people that you know, maybe pick one or two people, why is it important for those people to cultivate self-love? You do a case study or two for a moment. Think of someone in particular. What would be the benefit for that particular individual if they were on a journey of self-love, if they were to go more deeply on that journey? All right. So let's pause here for a moment. I'd love to hear from a few of you. What's your definition of self-love? Let's get some ideas going here and some brainstorming. And why are you seeing that it's important for you? Star two. And it looks like we're a little bit of a smaller group today, so feel free to raise your hands. What's your definition, Kelsey?
The quick definition that came to me around self-love, I do a lot of work with self-compassion and all that, but really is just this seeing, hearing, and loving yourself in the way we talk about it for clients, this self-attunement, this way that, like, paying close attention to what your own heart, body, soul, spirit is feeling, is wanting, is needing, and then honoring that, accepting it, honoring it, and allowing yourself to just have that.
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, there's so much in what you just shared so briefly, but it's almost like what I'm hearing is like the first piece of self-love is knowing yourself, just really being attuned and really just being open to knowing who you are and what you want.
Right. And not judging it and not having it be sort of a reflection of what anybody else wants for you, which, you know, something that was many of us, but in ways that we grew up, it was about being right or being, you know, for other people. But the self-love is, what do I really want? Knowing myself, connecting to self.
Yeah. Centering on you and connecting yourself. I love that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good. Justine.
Hello.
Hi.
I define self-love as that I accept all parts of me, all that I am and all that I'm not, and that I take good care of myself.
I love all of that so much. I love not that just accepting what I am, but accepting what I'm not. so key, and that's like it's where so many people get stuck. We're going to get more into that, and we're going to get more into the second piece that you spoke about. It's like you just gave us like parts of a preview of our call today. We're going to get into that taking care of self piece too. Awesome, beautiful.
Yeah.
Very nice. Corey.
Hello.
Hi.
I defined self-love as serving myself while also serving others.
Talk more about that.
I believe it encompasses the pieces that Kelsey and Justine just shared about remembering my identity, all of myself, while being in community so that I can enjoy my own life while contributing to the greater good and to other people. And that really is loving myself, and then in loving myself, I'm able to serve with all of me, the parts that I like, and as Justine pointed out, the parts of myself that may not be all that comfortable, but they still inform who I am.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that. And it's so, knowing you, it's it feels so right for you to bring that community piece into the exploration of self-love. It is such a part of who you are. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right, let's continue. So, what I want to say next is obvious, but I think it's important. Even when you're evolved, even when you're spiritually evolved, even if you're therapized, if you've been coached, you know, all of the things that, you know, so if you're here on this call, you fit into at least two of the things, if not all of the things I've just spoken about. If you're any of those things, then you know how important self-love is. And if you're on this call, I'm assuming that you've already done a lot of self-love work. There are always areas of improvement around self-love. That's the thing that I know I said it in a way earlier, and I want to just drive this home again. It's so easy for us to say, oh, I've already done the self-love work. I don't need to do more of it. But in my book and in my experience, it's a journey, and it's a marathon, and it's not a sprint. And I share that so that if you've done a lot of self-work already, as I'm sure everybody on this call has, that you listen with out filters or checking your filters around it. And also because it may come up for your clients too. Chances are a lot of you attract in clients who've who've already checked off the box, right? They think they've checked off the self-love box. So why do so many of us think that we've already checked off the box? It's because our culture doesn't really prioritize self-love. Culture gives it a nod, right? And even, I'm going to say, culture in general, and I'm going to say even the transformational industry, it gives it a nod. Of course we know we're supposed to love ourselves, right? If we're good spiritual people, if we're good, you know, coaches, you know, all of that, we know that. But all we have to truly do is look at marketing, any kind of marketing out there. There's very little messaging and marketing from most institutions that prioritize loving yourself over other things. it's almost like self-love is a birthright that our culture programs out of us in some ways. Like, we don't get to fully be born into it because of all of the messaging out there. And I see it even with my own kids, right? So, you know, for me, obviously, self-love is something that's so important. And it's, I have two daughters, and before they were even born, it has been my intention, you know, knowing that my job as a mother is to help them cultivate self-love. And I think I'm doing an okay job of it most of the time, but I also see how culture is working against me on this one all of the time. And just raise your hand if you don't know what I mean by that. I'll explain a little bit more. But the work that we do with our clients, the self-work love is so important because there's so many messages out there that are just teaching the opposite. So all that being said, let's go a little bit deeper with this. Even if you've done a lot of self-love work, what are the ways right now that you're not loving yourself? What are the ways that you aren't loving yourself right now in this period of time, in this period of your life, in this period of your business? And everybody, no matter how evolved you are, myself included, should probably have at least three things, if not more, on the list. What are the ways that you aren't loving yourself right now? It can be inner things or outer things. And let's take that question a step further. For some of you, the language that I'm about to use is going to resonate for you, and for some of you, the language won't resonate. But I'm just going to ask the question in this way. For some of you, it may produce some important insights. What are some of the ways that you're hurting yourself right now? What are some of the ways that you're hurt, inner or outer, that you're hurting yourself right now? Next question, what are some of the ways that you're tolerating other people not loving you? What are some of the ways that you've been tolerating other people not loving you? And this might be obvious or this might be really subtle. So for the people that are close to you in your life, are some of them not loving you? And let's say not, for now, let's use that, because, you know, oftentimes, for example, family members can love us for sure, but maybe not fully love us, or maybe we can add the word acceptance into that, right? So what are some of the ways that you're tolerating other people not loving you or not loving parts of you? Maybe that's a better way to ask the question. What are you tolerating when it comes to other people either not loving you or not loving parts of who you are or what your experience is? Couple more questions. Next question is, what happens when you don't love yourself? What are the results that you get when you're not loving yourself? So I've got two more questions. The next one is, how were your parents, or how did your parents model or not model self-love? Or if not parents, guardians, anyone that you were around growing up, close family members, grandparents, how did they model or not model self-love? You guys have heard me talk about the four levels of learning and transformation before, and what I often find, especially with self-love, is that it's usually easy to get that first level of learning and transformation with self-love. What I mean by that is that we all intellectually know how important and how vital and how, you know, that we need to love ourselves. We've bought into that idea. There's usually very little resistance to that. But it's very different to buy into the idea intellectually versus really feeling it, that self-love in your heart, really feeling it in your spirit, really feeling it in your body. So that leads to my last question for now, which is, what do you suspect are some of the below-the-surface beliefs that you're holding about self-love or valuing yourself? When I say below-the-surface, I mean below-the-surface limiting beliefs. What do you suspect, even though you know how valuable you are, even though you know, of course, all of you is wonderful, right? And to love it, like you know that intellectually, underneath that, what do you suspect are some of your limiting beliefs, beliefs that you're holding about your value or your how much you can love yourself. Hopefully that makes sense. All right, so let's pause here, and I'd love to hear from a couple of you again. What are you seeing from the series of questions around either the ways that you're not loving yourself or tolerating how others are not loving you or fully accepting you or beliefs that are coming up? What are you seeing? Kelsey.
Hi. So at first I was like, oh, you know, in the ways that I'm not loving myself or ways that I'm hurting myself, I was like kind of pat myself on the back. I'm like, yeah, I've really come a long way. Like there's not a lot of ways that I'm hurting myself. You know, occasionally I'll eat sugar or certainly the time piece is big. That's the big way where I overschedule myself. I'm not blocking enough time for myself. I let myself get distracted with Facebook and things like that. Those are, you know, the ways I'm hurting myself. The end part was just helpful. What do you suspect are the below the surface beliefs? Because they're still there, and just like writing them out reminds me like that this is the practice. So my below the surface beliefs are like that it's selfish to love yourself and put yourself first. That if you put yourself first, you'll end up alone. You have to martyr yourself or overgive for your kids or partner so they'll keep loving you. And really, your needs don't matter as much as everybody else's. And you can't really fully love yourself first or you'll be isolated and alone. And that's like the core wound that even though on the surface I'm doing so much better on like so many levels, that the limiting beliefs below the surface just like poured out. I know them. They're still there. They're deep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to say like you have come a really, really long way. And I suspect that it's more than just the surface. Like I really suspect it's numerous layers deep. And this also is very valuable because you can see the places to keep on working more. Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, even I just finished the time call right before this call. So I was like, yeah, I mean, that's a big way where I still do the non-self-love is through my schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah, overgiving in that way, yeah.
Yeah, good. And you can see even these beliefs, too, how that you just mentioned, how they plug in to the time stuff, too. It's like a matrix.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. Good. Thank you. Sophia.
Hi, Joanna. For me, a lot of my issues around self-love is I only feel okay or worthy when I feel like I've achieved enough, but it doesn't seem to ever happen because like I'll achieve something and then I'll feel like, oh, okay, I already got it. It's not enough. And then I need to find something else.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it doesn't, I never get there. And I'm starting to realize that it's like it feels kind of difficult for me to be happy with where I am. And when I make choices that don't turn out very well because, you know, sometimes we just don't have all of the information, or we don't know how something's going to turn out. I get very upset.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, what is wrong with me? I just can't seem to get it right. And so, yeah, I Yeah, for me, I have a very hard time dealing with mistakes or imperfection of any kind. I'm kind of rigid.
Yeah, I hear the imperfection piece, which I feel like you're adding here. I don't want to end on that, because I feel like what you were just talking about was a little bit different than the perfectionism piece, and I want to pull it out a little bit more, because this is really important. The perfection piece is important too, but what you were sharing before that, I think is so important, not just for you and not just for everybody on this call, but because our any client that we work with is likely going to have this too. So you were talking about this feeling of, it doesn't matter how much you accomplish, it doesn't matter how much you achieve, you don't enjoy it, it doesn't really feel like much once you get there, and you feel empty, right? What's the next thing that I have to do? And this, of course, impacts our ability to love ourselves when we're constantly feeling unfulfilled and that we're not fulfilling, right? What you're describing, I sometimes call like the well that can never be filled. And it goes back directly to what I was sharing earlier on the call about our culture and about all of the messaging that we receive every day and marketing and everything that is saying there's more to do, right? You know, there's more to go. And yes, of course, like, we all have big visions and, you know, we want to achieve more. I certainly do. But what I think happens for almost anyone that's living in this culture, that we fall, not to get too much into this right now, but, you know, we kind of fall prey to the wounded masculine that's pervasive in our culture, which constantly feels like it's not enough. And that there's more that needs to be done and more that needs to be filled. And when we're in that zone and we're not aware that we've fallen into that, it's basically impossible to really love ourselves. And then vice versa, when we're not loving ourselves, it's so easy to go to this place that you're talking about. Is what I'm sharing resonating for you?
Yeah, it definitely feels like the well can never be filled. And in fact, I'm sort of realizing that, like, the question for me that came up was, you know, who am I trying so hard to impress? You know?
Ah, yeah. Oh, I just got chills when you said that, yeah.
And I actually don't talk to my father anymore, but I had a very domineering father who, you know, he would just give me, like, impossible tasks to do, and I can never do them right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of understand where I'm duplicating this with myself a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So that's
I'm so glad you're making that connection. It's so important. Good. So what I'd say for you is, you know, a way to take this even deeper, in addition to all the other tools I'll share. So first of all, just for everyone, you see how just by, you know, the work that me and Sophia just did, just creating awareness can start to open things up, right? So that's one thing. But, you know, how I would take this maybe a little bit further for you, Sophia, is when you go into that place of beating up on yourself, I would try to stop yourself in that moment, see if you can catch yourself and ask, who am I trying to impress right now?
Oh, okay.
Right? And if you can't catch yourself in the moment, then make it a daily practice for a couple of weeks. At the end of every day, say, okay, when during the day was I not kind to myself? When during the day was I not loving myself? And just write out the moments and then say, okay, in this moment, who was I trying to impress? In this moment, who was I trying to impress, right? It'll start to be pattern, right? It's a little take on that rewiring tool, the rewiring. The
Okay.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I'll take a couple more. All these shares are so important, I think, for all of us to hear. Who is this? 0684.
Hi, this is Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Joanna. Hi. Hi, friends from all over the world. it totally resonates with me what you told us before in the creating awareness for Sophia in the last call. The wounded masculine, there's always more to be done. And I think I don't give myself permission to sit down and rest and always strive for learnings and insight and wisdom and goals. And I'm getting too pushy on myself. And it doesn't work, because in those moments I tend to overwork. And when you asked us about the definition of self-love, it's about knowing and accepting the whole me with all the bruises and talents and shadows and ambitions. And permission, to me, is a key word.
Yeah.
And I lack permission. I don't give myself permission to do the things I want to do, but also, to take rest. So it's always like I have to be something by first doing something.
Uh-huh.
And just being is not enough. I have to accomplish something first. And I'm a competitive person to myself. I don't feel any competition outside of me, but I'm always competing with myself, also because of the belief life's very short, so you have to do a lot of things. And but I don't think that is self-love, because sometimes I'm too harsh on myself, I'm too pushy and feeling guilty.
Yeah So there's a lot in what you just shared. For right now, first I just want you to write down: being is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I want you to write down is, I was born a person. I didn't need to do anything to accomplish that. I'm using your words, you know, from before. So if you want to speak, you can tweak some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What? So number one, I'd love for you just every day for the next couple of days to just journal on those two statements.
Yeah.
Use those two statements as a jumping off point for just free form, journaling, and go deeper into them. And the other piece is, how does it land for you if I told you that actually you could start giving yourself permission right now?
Ooh, feels a lot of relief. I can almost feel my shoulders when you say that. When you say that, it's almost like I'm giving myself permission hearing your voice telling me this.
So yeah, it wasn't really like that. That Nicole is right there under the surface for you. You know, it's not because you believe me.
Yeah.
It's just because it's there for you, right? So what can you do just today, not forever, but just for today, what can you do to give yourself more permission? Or where would you like to give yourself permission today? Think about what you're doing today, what's happening, or the next few days. What do you want to give yourself permission around?
I'm 3 days before going to holiday, so it's always very busy time. And it's almost like I've given myself permission. After Sunday, you can do anything. So but before that, but I can give myself permission right now.
Yeah, so I want you to play
to
with
relax
that.
More.
Yes, I want you to practice that between now and Sunday. Just make it a little game for yourself. You do what you need to do. You've got things to do, before you go away. But see if you can relax also and not be so hard on yourself. Give yourself permission there.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what I'm going to do next, because it's in the evening here, and I think I'm going to bed. I'm going to sleep. I need a lot of sleep.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe taking a bath and then going
I love
to sleep.
It. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Good. You're welcome. I'll take one or two more. Tina.
Hi, Joanna. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
So I'm actually, this is a great topic. I've been struggling with this a lot recently this year. I think the biggest belief system that was showing up for me is I'm having a lot of health struggles. And, you know, being a healer and going through that, there's a little bit of that struggle with, you know, if I'm a healer, to love myself through a really difficult transition with my health. And so it's been really hard for me to love myself through the ups and the downs of it. And I think I know why I'm going through this, because it's just going to make me a more compassionate healer in the end. But in the interim, I'm really struggling. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And so you're struggling. I just want to make sure I'm clear with the fact that you're a healer and you're not fully healed.
Yes, that's totally the belief system that's showing up.
Yeah. So you can just see right away how that's faulty, right?
Totally.
Energy follows energy. So if we as healers believe that we need to be fully healed or else we're not okay, then there's no way that our clients can sink into the process and the patience of not being fully healed either as they go through their journey.
Mm. Wow. So the belief system of I need to be fully healed but not honoring the process, correct?
Exactly. So it'd be the same thing as if I were to say to you, you know what, Tina, I'm training you how to be a more masterful coach, and because of that, there's nothing left for me to learn about coaching. I know it all. I get it all perfect all the time.
I see.
There's, right, like, I, number one, I could never say that, right? And number two, like, would you even, I mean, I don't think anyone would want, like, nobody would believe me if I said that.
Totally. It's showing up in so many ways in my life, and I'm like, wow, you know. And it's so interesting because, like, my mom was like that. She's not a healer, but, like, you know, growing up with a mom that was ill all the time, it's like it's showing up, like, such a shadow layer. For me, like, okay, well, just because it's showing up for you, surprisingly, around the same time that your mom was going through this, no surprise, you know, you're being given an opportunity to do it differently. But don't kid yourself. I'm totally struggling through it.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm glad you're calling yourself on it. I'm glad you can see this belief. And we're going to go into tools right now, and this first tool in particular I think is going to be really important for you. So,
okay.
Yeah, so let's go there. I know there are other hands raised. There's so much juiciness here. And I'll swing back around to more shares in a little bit.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's start looking at some tools. Hopefully at this point you're seeing the importance of not only continuing to cultivate your own self-love, but how this is so important for clients and ways that it can impact them. So I'm going to be sharing four tools today. As I said earlier, there's so many that again, one day I'll do the five-day retreat. But these four are ones that I think are really powerful and really important. So the first tool that you can use when it comes to cultivating self-love is, and a couple of people have already used this word here and there, radical self-acceptance. Acceptance is such an important pathway or gateway to loving yourself, because you can't love what you don't accept. I'm going to say that again. I know that this is obvious, but it's like obvious, but still we kind of move through our lives sometimes and we temporarily forget this one. You cannot love what you do not accept. You cannot love that which you deny. Deny is another way of saying not accepting. You cannot love that which you fight against. You cannot love that which you fight against. And how often do we fight against parts of ourselves or parts of our own life experience? How often do we not accept parts of ourselves and parts of our own life experience? For those of you that were with me in person in March for our shadow and archetype retreat, you know, we looked at what happens when certain parts of ourselves are denied and denied and not accepted and denied, right, and put into the shadows. Now, I want to say something about acceptance. Acceptance doesn't mean that you might not work towards changing some of the parts of yourself or your experience that you don't like. You can accept something and still work towards changing it if that's appropriate for you. I want to say that again. This is a subtle point, but it's a really important one. This is where a lot of people get messed up. People will say, I just can't accept this about myself because it's something that they want to change. And I get that. There's plenty of things that I want to change about myself, too. There are so many. And there are plenty of things that I have changed about myself, right? But you can change something while still accepting it. If you don't accept it, then you can't change it. I'm going to say that again, too. If you can't accept it, then you can't change it. So what does it mean to accept parts of yourself or parts of your experience? Well, for me, it means simply owning it, not fighting against it, not making it the enemy, not making it the thing that I think is going to take me down, you know, the stain, right, on me. And it's not denying that thing. I have examples of plenty of things about myself that I would like to change, but that I accept. Because when I used to fight against it, or make it the enemy, or deny it, or pass hard judgment on it, it didn't serve me. It just made that thing hurt me more. So, for example, I am very not good at giving gifts. I know it sounds kind of silly, but for many years this actually plagued me. So, John, my husband, is like the best gift giver that ever was, and his whole entire family are amazing gift givers. They give gifts for every single holiday, and it's awesome to receive, but it was always so hard for me as someone who just didn't even remember to pick out gifts, like let alone buy them, and I could never figure out, if I did remember, I could never figure out the right ones. And so it was really hard for me. I beat myself up about that for many years until I decided to accept it. Now, that doesn't mean that I still don't have to work to make sure around birthdays and holidays and anniversaries that I'm doing what I need to do, but I can accept that I'm not really good at it. And so then I don't have to beat myself up so much when I last minute finally remember about it, or when I'm having trouble finding the perfect thing, even though I know John is going to get me the perfect thing, right? I can cut myself some slack there. Now, a harder thing about myself that I had to work on for a long time to accept, the other one was easy to accept, right, pretty much. Another thing that I've had to work on for a long time to accept is aging. So for me, as soon as my physical appearance started showing signs of aging, I just had no love or acceptance for it whatsoever. I tried to fight against it tooth and nail. And you know, so much of it for me was that I just, at such a young age, I saw my mother get sick so quick. And, you know, to my mind at the time, I saw her get so old and so ugly because of it so quick. And, of course, that's about culture and women and how femininity is viewed, all of those things, you know, we know that. But so anyway, for a very long time, I really, I just couldn't accept this aging process. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't still annoy me or frustrate me sometimes. It does. But I've worked a lot to get to a place of really accepting that part of the process of being alive is aging and showing my age physically. And I've also had to get to a place of accepting that maybe my own personal genetics, I may age a little more quickly than other people. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't work with a naturopath to try to do everything that I can to slow down that process. I do. But I still accept my aging self as I'm doing what I can to slow it down. So take a moment and maybe just jot down for now one or two parts of yourself, or maybe it's a part of your life experience, something that you've gone through that you haven't actually been accepting. What are one or two things about yourself or your experience that you've kind of been fighting? You've been making it or the experience the enemy. You've been fighting it tooth and nail. You've been denying it. You haven't been accepting it. When you don't accept something, then you're not accepting the reality in this moment. Now, that can change, right? Again, there are the things we might want to change, and they can change, but the best way to change them is if we also own what is true right now. So next question, what's been the impact, the outer impact as well as the inner impact of not accepting the things that you're not accepting? How has not accepting these things impacted you? So if we're working, if we're going to use the self-acceptance tool as a pathway to self-love with clients, then the very first thing we want to do is create awareness for them around what they're not accepting, around what they've been fighting or denying or making the enemy. Then we want to create awareness on how that's been affecting them so that they can see the full picture here. From there, we want to support our clients to cultivate a compassionate relationship with the thing that they haven't been accepting, with the thing that they've been fighting or denying or making the enemy. We want to help them cultivate a compassionate relationship with that thing. So how can we support clients to cultivate that compassionate relationship with the parts of themselves or their experience that they're not accepting? Well, the first thing is to just, before the compassionate relationship, to just cultivate a real relationship with it, right? So for this, we can go back a little bit to how we do it in befriending your fear. Instead of befriending your fear, it's befriending the thing that you don't accept about yourself, right? Most of the time, if we haven't accepted something, we actually don't even have a relationship with it other than hatred, denial, sweeping it under the rug. So, you know, instead of disconnecting to this thing that we haven't been accepting for all this time, instead we want to lean into it and to create a relationship with it. So, for example, with me, one of my big aging pieces that had been so hard to accept, that was creating a lot of self-hatred, is that it was about my hair. So as I've aged, my hair has gotten thinner. It's just not like how it used to be when I was younger. And when I finally started on the journey of accepting that, you know, this is kind of just what's happening, right? We're still going to the naturopath, trying to shift that. But one of the things I had to do was create a relationship with my hair as it was, right? So I started dialoguing with my thinning hair. I just started writing to it, and I had it write back to me. We started talking. I would send it compassion. I would send it love. And I got to a place of, you know, my hair doesn't look the way I want it to, but I still love and accept this part of me. My hair is a part of who I am. Now, here's another important piece. Our clients are going to have a really hard time radically accepting themselves if we, as their coach, are not radically accepting those parts of our clients, too. One of our jobs as a coach is to, and we've looked at this before, is to radically accept our clients as they are, to radically accept who our clients are. And of course, I know that this is another one of those, of course, obvious statements, except not so much. It's another one of those intellectual, like, yes, of course, I radically accept my clients, right? But it's not always practiced deeply, because if there are parts we're passing judgment on, or parts that our clients have that we haven't accepted in ourselves, chances are we're not fully accepting it then in our clients. To accept others, we need to accept ourselves. And again, no perfection here, right? I don't fully accept and love all parts of myself, but I'm on the journey of it. I'm aware of it. I'm in process with it, so it allows me to do that for my clients. And I'll just say, like, I check my, this is a place where I check my filters, right? So if I notice that there's something about a client that I'm judging, I go back and I look at that. You know, why am I judging this? What is it about myself? What is the filter here? So the more that you can accept yourself, the more that you can accept what's going on with your clients or who they are or all the parts of them. And then this leads us to the next piece, which, I don't know, for some people this may sound a little unprofessional. I don't think anyone would be in sacred depths would think this is unprofessional, but you don't hear this spoken about a lot in trainings. But I'm going to take, you know, this acceptance of our clients a step further. I really believe that one of our most important jobs as coaches is to radically love our clients, to radically love them. Even if you're not a touchy-feely kind of coach, I still believe that one of your jobs is to radically love your clients. Because the container, as we've looked at before, is so instructive for our clients. The coaching container can literally shift dynamics for our clients. The more that we as coaches accept and love on the parts of our clients that they're not accepting or loving on, the more permission they have to do it. Okay, so we still have three more tools left that I'm somehow going to get through in the next 25 minutes. But I know that the self-acceptance, there was a lot that I just said in that one. I just want to pause briefly here. Does anybody have any questions on that one before we move on? Star two. Corey.
Oh, I had my hand up from way long time
ago. Oh, okay.
I'm kind of working with this, and that's okay. Everything you're saying, is when you brought up the filter part, I was thinking about 30 seconds before, oh, filters. Yeah, this is a good place to you to be pay attention and to be aware. And then you also mentioned the not perfect. I'm like, oh, good. And because it's, well, the piece that I did have my hand up for was in terms of the deep underlying belief, which I think fits with this, is that I already am too much, therefore I shouldn't love myself too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you identified that. You can start poking holes at that good.
Right, and I already, as I was listening to the other women share, I was letting that settle in, although I was conscious of that at that intellectual level, and I can look at some of the reasons. I could really feel that shifting and opening up and already feeling kind of the relief of healing with that.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll, of course, be more and more with that. And as you were talking about the self-acceptance, that peace, I guess I would say, inside, feels quite good. And I'm thinking of the clergy women and lay women leaders that I serve and how much of that, I think you referred to it as the wounded masculine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you said it earlier. How much that has pervaded Christian history and obscured what I believe and how I work with people in the truth of God's love for us that really does, for me, again, live and move and in me and surround me and through me, and how much we as women block that.
Yeah. Well, so that's perfect segue into our next tool. So I'm so glad you bring that up.
Sorry. Oh, that worked out well then.
No, you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
Oh, good. Tool. Thank you. Thank you.
Great. Good. Yeah, so I love all that Corey just shared, and like I said, it's perfect segue to another tool you can use to help your clients and yourself cultivate self-love, and that tool is connection to spirit. So even if you're not religious or spiritual, you can still use this tool even if your clients are not religious or spiritual, so long as they just believe in something that's bigger than they are. And that bigger can even just be their higher wisdom or earth energy or, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be God. But if a client believes that there's something bigger than they are, then connection to spirit can be a really powerful tool for self-love. Why is connection to spirit a pathway to cultivating self-love? Because spirit, however you're going to define it, whether it's God, Buddha, divine feminine, earth energy, higher knowing, whatever it is, in its most ideal form, spirit is an all-loving entity. And so many religions actually even see spirit as an all-loving parent, right? Or in the best form of the religion, right, we should say, they see spirit as an all-loving parent, right? And then, I'll just go from there. So we can use spirit as a surrogate for the all-loving parent that none of us ever got, because there really is no such thing. So I know for myself this has been one of the most powerful tools. When I am in a place of just, you know, I know that it's been days of self-judgment or hating on myself or not accepting or, you know, whatever it is, I find that connecting in with spirit allows me to not only calm down and to trust more, but it reminds me that I'm part of whatever that spirit is. It reminds me that I'm sacred. Even with all of my flaws or the parts of myself that I would like to change, I remember that I'm sacred, and I remember that I'm fully lovable. So, of course, and this is an important point, connecting to spirit as a pathway to self-love only works if you believe that whatever you're defining as spirit is all loving and that it loves you. If you have beliefs that spirit is not all loving or is judgmental or only loves the righteous or only loves the believers, you know, blah, 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 whatever it is, on and on, all the ways that religion has gotten kind of messed up over the years and all the ways that spirituality has gotten messed up over the years, if you've got any of those beliefs floating around, then connecting in with spirit may not feel like a nurturing experience that's going to help cultivate self-love. If that's the case for you or for your clients, then first you want to do some belief work, right? Or creating a new definition of spirit or finding a different type of, you know, spirit that they feel connected to. But then from there, one of the tools that I use, this is one of the tools I use most consistently over the last 20 years. It has been a bedrock for me as I write letters to myself from spirit. For me, it's the goddess, it's the divine feminine, whatever it is for you. And I write letters of everything that I need to hear from an all-loving source to me. I think I've shared this in the training before. This is really one of my lifelines. It's a go-to tool. And when I'm in regular practice of writing to myself from the voice of the goddess, so first of all, she doesn't say a lot of new things in the letters, right? Like, there's a lot that's repeated letter to letter. I mean, there are new things sometimes, but the repetition is actually good. It helps it drill down into me, right? Sometimes it's just general, you are so loved, or you're so sacred, or this part of you is okay, or you're okay, right? So that's a tool that I highly recommend. It's not for everyone, again, depending on what their relationship to spirit is, but it's one that can be really helpful if there is an established relationship there. Next tool, one that Justine mentioned earlier, is self-care. So if I see that a client needs some support around self-love, then one of the tools that I'll always use is also to look to strengthening their self-care. Because what one of the things that I've really seen is that when you take really good care of yourself, you start loving yourself more. It's almost like self-love flows from self-care. When you're taking really good care of yourself, loving yourself follows that energy. It's like energy following energy. So sometimes if you're having a block to loving yourself, take actions that are loving self to you, right? Love yourself through self-care, and then the energy starts to open up. Now, I want to be clear that when I talk about self-care, and I'll break this down a little bit more, but just at the outset here, when I talk about self-care, here's what I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about I have to go to this yoga class or whatever is on the have-to list, right? The obligatory, you know, list that we want to check off, the to-do list, because we've read up a lot on self-care. We know what we're supposed to do to take good care of ourselves, right? That's what the transformation or whatever the transformation industry has told us is good self-care. That's not what I'm talking about here. Now, those activities for sure can lead to deeper self-love and nourishment. You going to a yoga class can 100%, but not always. Not if it's just another way to keep yourself in order, to do more, to accomplish more, to be more, or to beat yourself up about because you're not doing them. Or if it's something that you do because you're a get-it-done gal, but it's just tiring you out and taking up your time. There's a difference between I'm going to yoga class because that's the thing I'm supposed to do, and that's what good spiritual people do to take care of themselves, versus taking an action because you know in your heart of hearts that it is going to deeply nourish you. Sometimes taking a nap is way better self-care than going to a yoga class. Sometimes watching TV, I know this is going to sound crazy, but just go with me here for a moment. Sometimes watching a half hour of TV may be better self-care than doing, you know, the thing on the list. Not always, but sometimes. Now, what I've also come to learn as a coach is that sometimes I'll know that a client is ready to do self-love work because they're not taking good enough care of themselves. So it can go both ways. They're not loving themselves enough, and so the antidote is the self-care action. But also, you know that the self-love work, it's maybe time for it because you see that the client is not physically taking good care of herself. Even though I work with entrepreneurs, you know, on their businesses and on their client work, self-care is one of the core pieces that I'm always tracking with my clients. I'm always looking for it. And it's a thing that I will prioritize over everything else, over business things in my practice with clients. When I say prioritize, I mean I cannot allow myself to support a client in getting a 3-day event together in 3 months or whatever, if I know what they need right now is to rest, right? We've looked at pieces of this before. So this goes back to what we spoke about in terms of the mystery, in terms of pausing, in terms of winter, you know, all of that. If we're not taking really good care of ourselves, if our clients aren't taking good care of themselves, then there's no way that they can achieve their goals with peace and harmony, right? It's just not possible. So, you know, I take oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes even just at the end of the very first call that I'll have with a new client, I'll spend a little time assessing if she's taking good care of herself. Is she getting enough sleep? Is she eating well? Is she drinking enough water? Is she in an environment that's working for her? Is she taking time and space for herself? All of that. So, okay, couple of things. Again, even, you know, like just this one tool of self-care itself, right? We could spend hours on this. I'm just planting little seeds for you here, or probably for most of you, the seeds are planted, just, you know, reminding and taking them deeper. But there are just a few more things that I want to say about self-care. Sorry, I just lost my place. Let's see. So we want to ask our clients, you know, we want to assess where, you know, all the questions that I just asked. Where can they take better care of themselves? But now here's the snag. coming up with the self-care action doesn't mean that the client is going to go do it, right? So that's where we want to use the befriend your fears and rewiring the negative beliefs and, you know, to help get into, you know, is there a martyrdom thing happening? Is there, you know, like Nicole was talking about earlier, selfish, you know, whatever it is, right? So we want to be able to look at those beliefs. The other thing is when I look at self-care, I kind of divide it into two different areas. It might be helpful for you to distinguish. I look at traditional well-being, and then I also look at pleasure. And to me, both of those are really important components of self-care and being fully nourished. So the, you know, kind of traditional well-being are things like tending to your body, right? The sleep, the food, the water, taking care of yourself when you're sick, taking time off when, you know, all of that. And it might be about physical things like manicures, pedicures, skin care, you know, all of that. But then, and some of those things may veer into pleasure, right? But I also just check to make sure, or work with my, I shouldn't say check to make sure, but work with my client to cultivate more pleasure in their lives. When you cultivate pleasure, when you create things that are pleasurable for you to experience, not only is that part of self-care, but then it's easier to love yourself. For those of you like me that are kind of into looking at goddesses, at, you know, archetypal energies, the goddess Venus is a great example of this. So Venus, or Aphrodite, is the goddess of self-love. Or, sorry, she's the goddess of love and the goddess of self-love. And she's also known for taking incredible care of her physical body as well as creating pleasurable moments for herself. You can't help but have one without the other, right? They're inextricably linked, the loving yourself and taking pleasure. All right, and then the last tool that I want to make sure we get to today is supporting your client to look at who they choose to be around and what they tolerate. This tends to be another biggie that I see for people around who they choose to be around and what they tolerate from those that they choose to be around. When we're little, we don't get a choice about who we're around and how they treat us. But when we're little, who we hang around and how they treat us really forms and creates so much of our own framework and understanding around self-love. And it usually ends up dictating how we treat ourselves. As adults, we have a choice. And what I often find in my coaching is that when I start working with a client on cultivating deeper self-love, I also like to look at relationships. And when we do that, we usually see one of two things happening. Either how the client feels about herself is being mirrored in how others are treating her. That's one possibility. And then we see that part of the self-love process is to shift some of that. Some of that is about letting go of relationships or setting better boundaries in relationships or asking for what you need, you know, being clear about what you need and asking that for what you need in relationships. But other times, how it shows up in relationships is actually that the client is surrounded by people that totally adore her and are loving her so deeply and doing so much to love her, but she's not fully receiving it. She's not able to take it in. And so then the work is about receiving what they've actually already created for themselves, which is an environment to be loved and to love yourself. So that was a quickie on that last tool. But, you know, I'm going to open up for questions right now. So if you've got questions on any of these tools, let me know. I want to hear a little bit about what you're seeing here today, what's been important here for you, what you're taking for yourself, and just any questions that you have. I've got some homework for you, but just let me see if there are any questions or takeaways that want to be shared. Star two. No, I'd love to hear. Here we go, Tina. Just to make sure you guys are with me here.
Okay. So definitely a big takeaway, and I loved, was writing letters to yourself. So I think what I'm going to do is today I have the whole day off. My kids are with my my godparents. And so I'm going to write a letter to my body on, you know, what it needs, how much I love it, and kind of see what happens. I'm kind of a little bit excited about it.
That's awesome. Yes, cultivate a deeper relationship with your body. I love that. That's
yeah, thank you for that. I never thought about doing that.
Yeah, good. I'm so glad. Okay, beautiful. So I think that's good segue into homework. There are a couple of things I want to suggest for homework. So first is, if it appeals for you, I'd love for you to make it a practice over the next few weeks to either, like Tina's doing, start dialoguing with the part of yourself that you haven't accepted, really create a relationship with it, or you can, if you don't want to do that, to start those the connection with the deeper connection with spirit, and maybe start writing those letters from spirit to you. So you don't have to write these letters every day. You know, for most of us, it's impossible. I mean, it would be awesome, but it probably might be too hard. If you could do it 3 or 4 times this week, it's not just the one sitting will be the breakthrough. It will be very powerful for you. But if you do it over time, that's when the transformation is going to start happening, to be in the practice of it. And what I like to do is not just write the letter. This is actually an important part of the tool. I'll channel, right? Like if it's from spirit, I'll channel what spirit's saying, or, you know, like what the part of myself that I'm not accepting. But then it's really powerful to go back and read it. That's a big part of the practice, is not to just write it, but then to read it. You'll see it will help you take it in even more deeply. The other piece I'd love for you to be thinking about is your self-care. And I know that we've got everybody here is already doing so much to take good care of yourself. But I want you to find one place, whether it's in the bucket of taking care of your physical well-being or if it's in the pleasure part, I'd love for you to pick one place where you can lean in a bit more, something that you're not currently doing that you want to start doing. And then add it in, right? Daily routine or to your weekly routine, whatever it is. I want you to do this for 2 reasons. First, just because like we're saying, energy follows energy, self-care is a pathway to self-love. You know, I want you to do this for yourself. But the other reason why I want you to do this is I want you to experience some accountability around self-care. Because you'll probably, especially with self-care, it's hard when we say I'm going to take this new self-care action, right? It's actually hard to do it. So I want you to experience accountability and possibly some struggles around accountability because this is exactly what your clients are going to be experiencing. Self-care, like I said, is often one of the places where people have the most trouble holding themselves accountable. It goes back to the selfish piece or the receiving piece, the martyrdom piece, the time piece, whatever it is. So I want to give you this homework so that you can see what comes up for you through adding this in. If you're working with a coaching buddy, then you bring it up there and see how it goes. All right, any other questions or anything that you want to share before we wrap for today? Star 2. All right. I'm wishing you all a wonderful rest of your day, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye. The moderator has left the